Canto 12, Chapter 8. Markandeya resists all temptation and prays to Nara Narayana Rishi. Sri Shaunaka said, O Sutta, saintly soul, may you live long. O best of speakers, please talk to us, for you are, for a mankind wandering in endless darkness, the seer of the opposite of the light. People say that the son of Mrikandu, a seer called Markandeya, was blessed with an exceptionally long lifespan and that he was the only soul to remain at the end of the Kalpa when this entire universe was engulfed. He, the foremost descendant of Bhrigu, this Kalpa factually took birth in my own family. We as yet have not seen any great deluge of all creation taking place in our age. When he alone wandered this great ocean of destruction, he spotted, so the story goes, a single wonderful personality, an infant boy, lying within the fold of a banyan leaf. About this, O Sutta, we are in great doubt. O Yogi, by everyone regarded the greatest authority on the Puranas, please put for us, so eager to know about it, an end to that doubt. Sutta said, O great sage, the effect of your question is that it will take away the confusion of the entire world, for it leads to the discussion of the story of Narayana that removes the dirt of Kali Yuga. After Markandeya had received the second birth initiation rituals from his father and orderly had studied the Vedic hymns and principles of religion, he was equipped with austerity and recitation. Keeping to the great vow of lifelong celibacy, he was peaceful with matted hair and bark clothes, and carried a water pot, a mendicant's staff, a sacred thread, and a celibate's belt. With the skin of a black deer and lotus seed prayer beads, he, for the sake of his regulated practice, worshipped at sunrise and sunset the Lord in the form of the fire, the sun, the guru, the scholars, and the supreme soul. In the morning and the evening he brought what he had collected by begging to his spiritual master and, being invited by his guru, then joined in the eating in silence or else, not being asked, he would fast. When he, thus with penance and study, had worshipped the master of the senses for countless or millions of years, he had conquered what is impossible to conquer, death. Brahma, Bhrigu, Shiva, Daksha, the sons of Brahma and many others among the human beings, demigods, forefathers and ghostly spirits, all stood amazed about that achievement. This way, with his austerities, recitations and restraint, maintaining the great vow of celibacy, the yogi, having turned his mind inwards, meditated on the Lord in the beyond and rid himself of all hindrances. As he was thus fixing his mind with the powerful practice of yoga, the enormous lapse of time passed, consisting of 6 manvantaras. In the 7th period of Manu, Purandara, Indra, heard about the austerities, became afraid of them, O Brahmin, and decided to obstruct them. He sent celestial singers and dancing girls to the sage, as also Cupid, the spring season, the sandalwood-scented Malaya breeze, the child of passion or greed, and the child of intoxication. O mighty soul, they all went to his hermitage on the northern side of the Himalaya mountains where the river Pushpabhadra and the peak named Chitra are situated. The fine site of the ashrama was crowded with twice-born souls, was marked with nice trees and creepers, and with reservoirs of pellucid water everywhere. Humming with maddened bees, it was filled with families of birds, excitedly cooing cuckoos and busily dancing proud peacocks. The winds, blowing there, transported the cooling drops of mist from the waterfalls and, being embraced by the charm of flowers, called for the god of love. With the moon rising at night, showing its face, springtime appeared there with series of new sprouts and blossoms from the multitude of creepers closely embracing the trees. The god of love, the master of hordes of heavenly women, showed himself there holding his bow and arrows, as he was followed by groups of singing Gandharvas playing musical instruments. The servants of Indra found him sitting there in meditation after having offered his sacrificial oblations, with his eyes closed, as invincible as fire personified. The women danced in front of him, and the celestial singers sang, making charming music with drums, cymbals, and veenas. And while the servants of Indra, the child of greed, and the child of spring, tried to agitate the mind of the sage, Cupid fixed his five-pointed arrow, concerning one's sight, smell, sound, touch, and taste, on his bow. The wreath of flowers fell from the hair of Punjikastali, an apsara, who, with her waist greatly challenged by her heavy breasts, was playing with a number of balls. Running after the balls, with her eyes wandering here and there, the belt of her thin garment loosened and the wind lifted up the fine fabric. Cupid, thinking he had conquered him, then shot his arrow, but all these actions directed at the sage proved to be as futile as the endeavors of a disbeliever. O sage, this way trying to compromise the sage, they felt themselves being burned by his potency and thus desisted, just like children having aroused a snake. O Brahmin, even though the followers of Indra had violated the great Muni, he did not yield to the sentiments of ego. For a great soul, that is not so surprising at all. Seeing and hearing how, because of the strength of the Brahmin seer, Kamadeva, along with his associates, stood powerless, the mighty king of heaven was greatly amazed. In order to show the sage his mercy, who thus had fixed his mind in austerity, recitation, and restraint, the Lord manifested himself in the forms of Nara and Narayana. One of them was white and the other black. Their eyes were like blooming lotuses. They had four arms, had clothes of bark and black deerskin. They carried a water pot and a straight staff of bamboo in their most purifying hands and had three-stranded sacred threads. With prayer beads of lotus seeds and with the Vedas that purify all living beings in the form of bundles of dharma, they, being worshipped by the chief demigods and standing tall with an effulgent yellowish color, radiating like lightning, were austerity personified. Seeing the sages Nara and Narayana, the forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he stood up to offer his obeisances with the greatest respect and prostrated himself. Because he, when he saw them, experienced happiness all over his body, mind, and senses, and the hairs on his body stood on end, he was unable, from the tears filling his eyes, to see them clearly before him. Standing humbly, with folded hands, he addressed them eagerly, as if he wanted to embrace them, and, choking, said to the two lords the syllables, Namaha, Namaha, my obeisances. He offered them seats, bathed their feet, and worshipped them with incense and flower garlands while anointing them with sandalwood and other fragrant substances. As they sat comfortably on their places, ready to bestow their mercy upon the sage, he again bowed down at their feet and spoke the following words to the supremely worshipable personalities. Sri Markandeya said, O Almighty One, how can I describe you who moves the vital breath of all embodied living beings, including Brahma, Shiva, and myself, and who, following, stirs into action the power of speech, the mind, and the senses? Nevertheless, despite this physical imposition, you become the loving friend of everyone worshipping you. These personal forms of the Fortunate One, O Supreme Lord, you manifest for the ultimate benefit of the cessation of material misery and the defeat of death. And while you, for the sake of protection, manifest various other forms, you, like a spider with its web, once having created this universe, again swallow it up completely. Because of you being the protector, the supreme controller of the moving and non-moving living beings, the one situated at the soles of your feet is never touched by the emotions of karma, guna and kala. It is before you indeed that the sages, with the Veda in their heart, at every moment in praise, bow down to worship and meditate to attain you. We know of nothing else but the attainment of your feet, the very form of liberation, O Lord, that benefits the person who has to fear from all sides. Brahma, whose time takes 2 parardas, is most afraid on account of this, because you are the time. And how much more would that not be true for the worldly entities created by him? Let me therefore, with forsaking the covering of my soul, worship the foundation of your feet, of you, who are the intelligence of the real and the teacher of the soul, who are the absolute truth. The material body, with everything thereto, is but temporal. One remembers it for only a moment, and without its essence, it has no meaning. One must attain you, and thus see all desired purposes fulfilled. O Lord, O friend of the soul, even though all the products of your illusory potency, carrying the names sattva, rajas and tamas, exist as a form of your pastime for the sake of the maintenance, destruction and creation of this universe, it is the mode of goodness, sattva, that exists for our liberation, and not any of the other two basic qualities of passion and ignorance that bring men danger, bewilderment and fear. Because fearlessness, the happiness of the soul, and the spiritual world are attained by the mode of goodness, the sattvatas, your devotees, are of that consideration and never of any other mode or form of the original person. For that reason, the spiritual authorities in this world worship, as most dear to them, the transcendental personal form of you, Vishnu, as also the form of those who have only eyes for you, the Vaishnavas, O Supreme Lord. The all-pervading, all-inclusive manifestation and master of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my obeisances, for he is both the supremely worshipable deity Narayana, the sage of perfect purity, and Nara, the best of the humans and master of the Vedic scriptures in command of his speech. He who, by the deceptive command of his eyes, becomes diverted in his intelligence and fails to recognize your presence within his own senses, heart, and even within the objects perceived, may, despite his understanding being covered by your Maya, nevertheless succeed and arrive at realization when he directly obtains the Vedic knowledge from its source, from you, the spiritual master of all. The vision of the Supreme Soul, the mystery revealed by the Vedic texts, is what the great scholars headed by the unborn Lord Brahma become bewildered about when they try to adjust with all sorts of philosophies the subject matter of your person to their way of life. You, the Supreme Personality, who escapes the understanding of the materially conditioned spirit soul, I offer my respects.